On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. You're listening to the Bechdel cast. This is our podcast about movies and women in them. My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
And this is our podcast called the Bechdel cast, which is our podcast.
What is this, the Groundhog Day episode?
But what's it about? Women and the movies that they're in.
Specifically, how those movies portray the female characters.
Oh, yeah.
And how it's often not very good.
Almost always bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking news quick at the top of the episode, we have heard from Alfred Molina.
Yes.
As of today, you can attest, called you
crying,
weeping in my garage, which is where I fled to. I just ran to my garage and called you. And Alfred Molina must, and not to call him out, but he must search his own name regularly on Twitter.com.
Because you did not mention him. You did not at him.
He was not tagged.
Right.
He was not tagged in any way. And he certainly does not follow me on Twitter.com. So he must have found it. I believe what I said was that I got so distracted by thinking about how Chris Noth is the poor man's Alfred Molina that I walked into traffic, which is true. I did that this morning because I've been watching The Good Wife and I hate it, but I keep watching it. But Alfred Molina found that, quoted it, was extremely humble, wanted to give Chris Noth his due, which, like, why bother? But whatever. And now he alleges that he will come on this podcast.
Yes.
So after, what, a full year, this is the closest we've gotten, and I'm not going to let it go.
Right. We will stop at nothing to get Alfred Molina on this podcast.
We know he's nearby.
We'll do it.
We basically
recording this on August 17th. The episode won't come out for a couple weeks after this. By the time it comes out,
would have divorced his wife. We'll be fully... I realized recently it's my dream to have stepchildren who are older than me and hate me. And I think that marrying Alfred Molina is going to be an amazing shortcut to achieving that.
For sure.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the breaking news. We'll keep you posted. As of August 17th, I'm still flying high and crying about it.
Mm-hmm. So. Indeed.
There you go.
Bringing it back to the cast.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we should mention what is Bechdel? Well, it's a test. It requires that two women have to talk to each other in a movie. They have to have names, and their conversation has to be about something that's not a man.
Da 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 da.
So we will check in with this movie that we're talking about later on to see if it passes the Bechdel test. But before we do that, we should introduce our terrific guest.
Okay.
He is a hilarious comedian. He has a half hour coming out on Comedy Central and his first album coming out in October. Solomon Giorgio.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for being okay with me being late.
Oh, that's fine.
No problem.
One of us is late almost every episode.
Perfect.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I've been so late that I've missed the episode. It's all good.
So we're here to talk about Grease 2.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you pick this movie? What's your relationship to it? When did you first see it?
It is one of those movies that I think is a sequel that's better than the original.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched it in like 1985 on like TBS or TNT.
Because it came out in what, 82?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was like a young kid and like I think I watched Grease before it and then I was just like, I get it. But then I saw the second one, I was like, this is what good movies are. I probably watched it 20 plus times.
Nice.
It's one of those ones that's always, always, always on TV. Just like the really bad TNT edit of Kill Bill that's always on TV that I love. Or I'm trying to think of other movies that are always on basic cable for some reason.
I feel
reason,
like Back to the Future is always on.
Not as much as you think. The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Some regular that movie.
It's one of the few movies where wherever it starts, I will sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine.
It must be like cheap to license because there's like five movies that are always on television no matter what.
And Heat is another one, which is very weird because it's a very long movie.
Yeah, it's forever long.
Yep.
That's crazy. Jamie, when did you first see Grease 2?
Today.
Same.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought I had seen the first one all the way through. Apparently, I have not, because I watched it yesterday, and I do not remember the second half of it at all. So I had not seen that entire first one until yesterday. And I got to be honest, I don't really like it.
The first one?
Yeah.
I like it up until a certain point, right up to Stalker Channing's abortion song. And then after that, I'm like, I'm done.
It's hard to stay on board after that. The first Grease, I'm like, too, like, I've seen it a bunch of times, and I was like, did it for like summer stock theater and like all this. Like, it's, man, it's an exhausting show with a deeply questionable message. I do think that the message is the same in Grease too, but it's like, flipped in a way that I like way better.
But it also wasn't like the like when Sandy churned at the end, there was that was like out of nowhere.
Right, oh, right. There was no process.
Literally no need for that to happen at all. He was already on board.
Right. Yeah, and she's like, "Oh, I wear leather jackets to smoke cigarettes now."
And he's like,
"Now
even better." The transformation takes place for most, I mean, like a good hour. There's a lot of motorcycle learning montages.
Oh, in Grease too? Yeah.
It was I really liked it. I was riveted.
I had a fun time watching it. Yeah, I like it a great deal more than the original, the first one.
Well, it made the Pink Ladies the star, which I think is the better. And also, if you're talking about leading men, Max Caulfield versus John Travolta, I'm fucking going Caulfield.
Yes.
Every time.
100%. Yeah, this felt like Grease 2 felt like a really good rewrite of the first Grease.
Yeah.
Like it's just a better version
of
the
first. Yeah, it felt
like
a later draft that was like, what if we just make this whole thing better? And yeah. But I do love though that basically this movie is about a woman not liking a very handsome British man because he doesn't wear leather jackets.
He's a nerd.
Oh. He's such a nerd because he's British. Nerd.
But he's also, like, she's also doesn't like the toughest boy in school either.
True.
She's also done with him.
Yeah.
I guess she just needed a combination. She needed a sensitive guy who wears leather jackets. That's all she wanted.
And yeah.
And she was not lying because the second one came around, she got on his motorcycle and was like, I don't care what your face is. I was really hoping for a more dramatic Phantom of the Opera style review. In this, the weird scene at the end with the Grecian pool. I was like, oh yeah, like high school.
Yeah, that happens.
The big float. Where he comes in, I was like, oh my God, I wanted her to, that's maybe my only gripe with this movie. I wanted her to take off his helmet or his, not even his helmet.
He's wearing
weird
goggles.
It's his Phantom of the Opera mask that he's wearing for the whole movie.
But also, how great would it be to just have sex with somebody wearing a helmet and never see their face?
I've been married to the same man who's been wearing a scuba helmet for 12 years. And we're very happy. I have no idea
I've
who he
been
is.
Married to V from V for Vendetta.
Hasn't said a single word to me, and I'm having a great time.
All of these people we just described are better at hiding their face than the Phantom of the Opera.
You let it out very quickly.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's Gerard Butler with some sort of allergic reaction happening on one half of his face.
Well, hey, I think that's a great transition into the recap of Grease 2.
Oh, for sure.
So the story is about Stephanie. She's sort of the lead of the Pink Ladies, this kind of clique at Lydell High School. Stephanie had been dating the leader of the T-Birds. Mm-hmm. Is that what they're called? The T-Birds. His name is Johnny. And she's like, you know what? I'm over it. We're over. I'm single now.
Yeah, you're a perv. I'm done.
Yeah. Then who shows up but Michael Carrington, a British man whose cousin's with Sandy, Olivia Newton-John's character from
Very
the first
fun
one.
Fun throwaway detail.
Right. I also like that he spends the whole movie speaking in a British accent, but Sandy was Australian. I mean, I guess there can be intercontinental cousins.
Well, was she
cousins.
From New Zealand? I can't remember now.
Australia, I'm pretty sure.
She was? Okay.
Yeah. Back. In any case, it's confusing, their relationship. But he shows up, and he's handsome to boot. And he takes an interest in Stephanie, but she's like, you don't wear enough leather jackets. You don't have enough motorcycles. So hard pass. So he's like, well, I'm going to have to win her over somehow. So he starts saving up money. He's writing essays for the other T-Bird guys, buys a motorcycle, gets a leather jacket, gets some goggles, turns into this mystery man. Then Stephanie was like, ooh, leather jacket, goggles, sign me up. So she just like hops on the back of his motorcycle. They have a kiss, a little smooch. And then at one point in the movie, there's these like other leather jacket wearing guys from, I think, another school.
Yes.
And they show up.
That was a little unclear to me. Okay.
Yeah, they're not the T-Birds. They're just another group that seems similar to the T-Birds.
They look and behave identically.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
They did the same thing in the first movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And the one guy gets called Crater Face a lot. So they show up, and then the T-Birds start getting wise to Michael, whose identity still remains unknown. And they're like, who's this mystery guy? None of us like him. So they all chase him, and he jumps over this ravine, I guess, and everyone thinks he dies. So then Stephanie's sad, and she's like, well, nah. And then everyone's gearing up for this talent show, and then he shows up, and he's like, I'm not dead. And then they are in love. The end.
The talent show is okay. Help me out here, because there are the three spiffy young men who are good at singing, mm-hmm. who we see several times, and at the end the T-Birds are like, we're gonna take their jackets, which is where they hid their talent, because then the T-Birds go on stage and suddenly they can sing and they're really good. I don't know why they kidnapped the sweet little spiffy boys.
It's like Jesus in the Technicolor Dream Coat. Is that what that is about?
Joseph. Very close. Yeah. Jane.
Yeah. It's all the same to me.
It's exactly the same.
Biblical names bleed together. No, I'm going to stand by Jesus and the Technicolor Dream Coat. I don't care.
Jesus was
really
not
is.
Stylish from what I've seen. Judas, however, if we are to judge from his first number in JC Superstar, extremely stylish. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to figure out how to get that outfit for myself for years. Mm. It's like a two-piece orange tie-dye. It's great.
You're going to have to make it.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
That's the rule.
That's what Judas had to do.
Judas had to do.
Oh, it's so good. Anyways, what are we talking about?
The Spiffy Boys. But I think the most important part of this movie that we glossed over was the return of Didi Khan as Frenchie.
Oh, right.
Boy,
which
yeah.
I think is...
It's so
So does she re-enroll weird. Back in school to learn chemistry so she can like develop skincare
yes.
products?
That's not how high school works. You don't go back for one class.
The best... Like, I never... Frenchie's life is my favorite life because it doesn't make any sense. The fact that her character just leaves school and becomes a beauty school dropout has nothing to do with the first movie. Yet
yeah.
It's I like the fact that Frenchie just shows up and you're like, here's her side story and you need to know it and it will not make any sense to anyone.
Well, how much time has passed between the two movies? I know it's like 4 years between the movies were released, but like narratively...
2 years.
Okay, only 2 years.
Okay. 2 years. So she...
But she was a senior, so she...
But she didn't graduate.
Years. Okay.
So I think she just came back for her senior year to graduate.
Okay.
And I think she's just going to go on to another school. I have no idea exactly how the world of cosmetics work, but I'm pretty sure.
You don't need a campus. Every scene Didi Khan is in is so, because everyone in this movie is 30, but she looks 30.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So, and then there's that scene where she's like working at her side job, and it's like, it's so unclear. And then she says she's like, Stephanie's one of my best friends.
Right.
But they almost never talk.
You never see them hang out.
Like, are you lying?
It's just like a Pink Ladies thing, I guess. But she sort of almost plays like an oracle kind of like phase,
yeah.
but like not giving any like solid advice. Just like, this is what's happening.
Right. She's like, you're not a T-Bird, so you can't even look at Stephanie.
She really just gives exposition from the previous movie.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, she doesn't push the plot forward really. Like, does she? I mean,
she's like,
well, this is how the Pink Ladies and the T-Birds work. And if you don't know that, then... And then she just, like, you know, disappears.
But she also is like, that's not how it worked when she went to school there. Like, she saw
right.
that, like, a shift in that power dynamic, and then she's all of a sudden, she's like, I'm just gonna reinforce it for this young boy.
Right. Oh, wait.
It used to be this way. I changed a little bit, but it's gonna stay this way again. I'm going to go to Shining Time Station.
She's living in the past. What else do you expect?
She's
back
like
in high school.
She's the person coming back to the frat house. It's just like, oh.
I want to see her like 30 years later, a la Strangers with Candy, going back to high school as like a 47-year-old. I want to see that sequel. Grease 3, baby.
She's living
Where
in some
it?
Sort of very strange feedback loop.
Like, I'm here to get my AP English course because I'm going to become a poet.
She's going to high school, but she's only taking a chemistry class. It just doesn't make sense. And then she's in, that's like the one scene she is in with Stephanie, is when all the pink ladies that are always together come in and they see Frenchie, but they still kind of make fun of her a little bit. Like, it's confusing.
They're kind of mean to each other, all the pink ladies.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of their...
One gets slut-shamed by another one and didn't care much for that. She's like, you'd fool around with anyone. And they're also mean to those twin cheerleader girls. Yeah. I don't know.
To
they're
be
kind
fair,
of bullies.
They're
mean girls.
Yeah.
Let's keep reinforcing the stereotype. Yeah, so who do we have female character-wise? We've got Stephanie. That's Michelle Pfeiffer. And then her other pink ladies, I think, are Paulette. There's Rhonda. I think one more whose name I didn't ever
Sharon.
Catch. Oh, right.
Sharon's the one who's backed into the bunker, right?
Yes.
Oh, gets
yes.
like manipulated into sex.
Because going to war.
Right. Yeah.
I'm glad that she doesn't, or like nothing happens and they don't go through with it. Because otherwise that would have been horrific.
Yeah, that scene didn't age very well, did it? And also, like a lot of scenes in this movie, have no, like if you take that scene out, the movie's unchanged.
Yeah.
Nothing. Oh, yes. It's a musical number.
Mm-hmm.
That's what both Greases are like that. You can take an entire thing out and you're like, this has nothing to do. Oh, this is the same.
Does it? Well, yeah, because especially in the first Grease, you could go from the first moment to the last moment, and that's pretty much the whole story. It's like, she's not like the other girls. Just kidding, she is. And then the movie's over.
Yeah. Okay, so there's Dolores, which is, I think, Paulette's younger sister. She's the one who's like, I ride a skateboard. I'm not old enough to drive. Wah, wah, wah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Frenchie. We've got a few teachers and school administrators, like Miss Mason. Everyone makes fun of her hair / compliments it.
Mr. Spears.
Mr. Spears.
What's wrong with him? At the end, he walks into a pool.
I do love the, like, both movies are the same situation, just this airhead school administrator that doesn't know.
It's Miss McGee and Blanche. Like, they're this little duo of, like, clueless.
However, I do love, it is an 80s trope that I wish would return, is Paulette's younger sister, the tough little girl that's there for no other reason but... to just show up and be like, I'm fucking tough, and then just disappear.
Well, there's
and
a
then
weird
she pops up again at the end. You're like, oh yeah,
oh right, you were a person
and
in this movie.
Like, we have to break up.
Well, the first time you meet her, she's talking to Michael, and he's like, can I walk you home? She's like, I don't need a babysitter. And he's like, well, what if it's a date? And meanwhile, she's 13, and you're like, oh,
that is gross. But I do, it's a weird thing, but that trope, I think, it comes back every once in a while, and I love it so much. I think it should always come back, because the last time we saw it was Kick-Ass.
Ooh, yeah.
And, like, the only time that trope ever got their own movie, I believe, was Curly Sue.
Oh, I've never seen that.
I haven't seen that
just,
either.
Yeah, the whole tough little girl who has to deal with a shitty world.
Yeah.
And she's had enough.
Yeah, she's our little punky in this one.
I like Dolores.
And if you don't like her, she's in it for 5 minutes total.
She's there to just add some spice and then get out.
Exactly.
So the first point I wanted to make, and we already kind of touched on this, one of the reasons I didn't like the first Grease very much and why I like this one a lot better is that the first one, the female lead, Sandy, was very passive. Like, things were just sort of happening to her. She didn't really have any agency. She spent most of the movie just, like, pining over Danny Zuko and then being like, well, he doesn't want to be with me, or he's with another girl, and I'm sad, and I'm not going to do anything about it. And then in the end, she basically changes everything about herself for no reason.
Yeah. And it worked.
And it worked.
She got him, even though she would have had him anyway.
Yeah. Decides before.
I love her, man. Oh, now she's doing what I want.
Now she's hot. Oh, and I can control her. Right. And then they fly away.
Yeah. So that is stupid. But then you see a shift with Grease 2 where Stephanie becomes the protagonist. Mm-hmm. She's got agency. We know what she wants. She very explicitly says it
in one of the greatest songs.
Dance number.
It's so good.
The best song of all the Grease movies. Cool Rider is so good. It is so good.
It's funny how that song sort of ends. There's a lot of songs in this movie that end with, like, it's usually one person singing it, and they'll just walk away, and the song will fade out as they're walking away by themselves talking about what they want. And you're just like, this is great. Like, Cool Rider fades out when Michelle Pfeiffer just, like, walks out of school.
That's what I want. I'm talking to myself.
We're to believe she keeps singing. We just can't hear her anymore.
So there's that moment where we're like, okay, we know at least what she wants, you know, as the audience. We have an understanding of what she's all about. And then there's another moment in the bowling alley, I think, where...
The bowling song. Mm-hmm.
The bowling song. And then Johnny's all like, I want my trophy, calling women literal trophies.
Mm-hmm. Judy Garland's daughter's having none of that.
Exactly.
Eventually.
Oh, wait, is that who that is?
Laura Luft, yeah.
Oh.
Really? Laura Luft.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Wait, she plays, is it
she
Paulette?
She plays Paulette.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And it went. And if you rewatch it with that, her inflection, she's,
oh, you
she's
see
totally
it.
Doing
oh,
mommy.
Wow.
Mm. Laura Luft's super talented.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, she gets called a trophy, but she's like the second place, or she's like, you're the runner-up or the whatever, best average. And he's like, what about... first place best score, and Stephanie's all like, I'm not a trophy.
But she never argues. She's sort of his exception. She's like, yeah, I'm the hottest. I just don't want to date you.
Yeah, she's like, I ain't no one's trophy. I kiss who I want when I want. I'll kiss the next guy who comes into the
who happens to be
hot British Michael. But the problem now, so she has more agency than the female lead in the first movie. Great. However, the problem for me is that everything is still like that song, that conversation, the whole story is still framed around like which guy she's gonna end up with. So it's like, you know, still not the feminist masterpiece that we're hoping
for.
It's
very true. However, it is based on her decision.
Right.
Which is good.
Yes. Because she's still got Johnny being like, I want you. And she's just like, no, I already told you we're through. And he keeps trying. And she's like, no, I'm gonna be with who I want. And it's going to be this mystery Phantom of the Opera motorcycle guy.
Love the Phantom of the Opera.
God, it is such a good reference.
It never gets old.
Except when he takes off his mask. He's extremely hot underneath and hotter than everyone else in the movie.
I'm going to start wearing Phantom of the Opera masks on dates and stuff.
Because then when you take it off, guys are like, wow.
No matter what's there, they'll be like, cool.
Better than the mask.
Yeah, you're hotter than that mask you were just wearing. Yeah. Johnny is weird because I watched the first one as well. And Johnny's like a slightly less desirable Danny Zuko character. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're almost commenting on that character and what a piece of shit he is.
He is,
because he's like basically the same character, but this time Stephanie's like, no, you're dumb, and like points out everything that is wrong with basically Danny Zuko.
Yeah, and that is exactly what should be done. Danny Zuko is a piece of shit.
He's a crummy dude.
With both of those characters, Danny Zuko and Johnny, they're just like dripping with toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this movie does a little bit better job than the first one of being like, hey, maybe this isn't the best quality to have as a man.
Yeah. Well, this movie, like frames it and kind of all the T-Birds as like, that's not attractive. And that's not something that will get you a girlfriend. Except, does Johnny end up with Paulette? Does she end up accepting?
I think so.
Oh, bummer. Well,
I watched it 1.5 times, so I forget what happened. But I do think they end up together. And then I think a couple of the other pink ladies end up with the other. But they're, you know, like secondary characters who we're not very invested in.
And there is a weird plot contrivance code that keeps coming up of like pink ladies can only date T-Birds. And that's, I feel like that's only brought up when there's virtually no other reason for Stephanie to not at least give Michael a chance. She's like, no, I can't, or I'll be assassinated, or like whatever. The weird,
it's the pirate's code. It's
also, what a dumb rule.
Yeah.
How did that ever come about? It's like, all right, you guys are the pink ladies with the T-Birds. Well, we'll make a rule. We only date each other. Well, what about if future people don't want to date each other? Well, fuck them.
Figure it out. Like,
they can sing a song about it because I don't give a shit.
Well, it's like the pirate's code in Pirates of the Caribbean. And toward the end, they realize it's more like actual guidelines. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
You can do whatever you want.
Well, it's like they almost call out the fact that that's so fucking, like, because there's one scene where the pink ladies are like, you can only date a T-bird till graduation anyways. And it's like 2 months before graduation. It's like, why would you, what?
Why keep enforcing this? It's mm-hmm. so stupid.
Also, the way that time passes in this movie is confusing. Because it's the first day of school and they're like, time to start getting ready for the talent show in June.
Yeah.
September 1st.
Right.
It's an important talent show.
Right.
I've said that before.
They needed all those times.
I walked into high school and was like, it's time to get ready for the talent show.
Also, well, imagine how long it took to make those amazing costumes in Girl of All Seasons.
With all the seasons.
It was like some Adrian shit. It was beautiful. Like, my favorite one was like the one who was wearing a baseball glove on her head. Like that. Ugh.
Oh. Amazing. I didn't even catch that detail.
You need to watch that whole scene in slow motion.
The talent show
costume.
Is... It's a ridiculous one. Like, it's the same scene as the dance number in the first one, where it's like, no one does this, do they?
No.
Like, is this a real school? I want to go to this school now, because I want to see everything they do.
Every costume in Girl of All Seasons is the most incredible costume I've ever mm-hmm. seen. Including, there's another one where Michelle Pfeiffer comes out. She has the most boring costume. And then, derails the talent show, but she's, like, wearing a white dress. Because, of course, and then the girl behind her is wearing a dress that's shaped like a cake and mm-hmm. has fake legs popping out of it. It's unbelievable.
I missed this whole thing.
Oh, it's so... I'll send you screenshots.
You gotta rewatch the talent show.
Yeah, I guess so.
Speaking of costumes, though, did you catch the part toward the beginning where Stephanie is wearing, like, short pants? And then I think it's, like, Miss McGee is, like, pants. And then she's like, oh, crap. And then she puts mm-hmm. on a skirt. Is that because, I guess, pants were against the dress code? Or, like, women weren't allowed to wear pants?
Yeah.
Back then? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm.
Pants
I was
were,
just like,
I think the rule, probably, if it's back then, the rule is wear a skirt, and your skirt can't be shorter than
like your
where
knees,
your fingers
right.
meet. Your,
yeah. Or even longer, I would mm-hmm. think.
Probably longer then, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is the way they remind you what era this movie takes place in is very clumsy in a way I thought was fun, where they would just be like, as John F. Kennedy would say, who is still alive, like, you're just like, before the luau, the principal spews out this JFK quote and is like, and now for the luau. Like,
but no, that was, wearing pants at school was a big... No.
Right.
So she
then
was...
Then why did she wear them to school in the first place?
Fuck them. She should wear pants wherever she wants to.
I agree. But yeah,
she's a pink lady.
You don't change the rules by not breaking them.
Yeah, ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah.
The rule of Stephanie.
Exactly.
The Stephanie code.
The Stephanie code.
Data, masked British guy, who I think also does a fake American accent when he's doing his thing.
Oh,
I feel
God,
like.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess
so. That
does.
No, because otherwise, like, that would be a dead giveaway for who he is. So he's doing, like, a fake American thing.
She full on makes out with him for, like, hours without being, like,
by the way, who are you?
No, but I get, like,
I'm on board with
there's
this.
There's a version of my, like, if I had the opportunity to make out with a goggled man when I was 16. 100%, of course.
Really?
I'd do it now.
I wouldn't.
I'd do it, like, I'll go outside if they're.
And get on the first motorcycle that pulls up.
Like, if I start singing Cool Rider and a great human being in a helmet shows up, and I'm just like, you know what? This wasn't meant to be.
I'm yours. Oh, God. And then, can we talk about the dream sequence?
Sure.
I love the dream sequence. It's.
I don't remember the dream sequence. It's been.
Oh, it's when Stephanie still thinks that Michael's dead or Cool Rider's dead. And then she has that whole scene when she ruins the talent show, which, like, she ruins the talent show by being in the chorus and not knowing the words. But anyways, she starts singing her own song, and then it cuts to this dream sequence of her running towards Cool Rider. She's wearing a Grecian dress, and then he's not a good singer, but he's like, babe, what if I
was alive?
And she's like, I wish you were. And then they have a very tense, weird exchange. She's like, just when I thought I found you, I lost you. And he's like, I know, but it doesn't matter now because we can always be together. She's like, okay. And then she wins the talent show. It's great.
I think I must have, like, drifted off during the talent show because I don't remember.
It's logistically one of the most, it's a fever dream of
so many things and happen, but none of it matters.
I do remember Johnny, like, going out onto the stage or, like, being pushed on stage and, like, ruining someone else's song. I don't know.
That's when they steal the Spiffy Boys jackets and all their singing talents.
It's very weird. There's no allowance of resetting a song. Yeah. They're not like, you want to start from... No, we're going to just go ahead and say this is ruined. You can't do it again.
The show must go on.
But Johnny also wins. It's almost like the talent show didn't happen because the two people who win respectively ruined the numbers that they were in. But they're like, no, we're putting you out on the luau float in the pool.
It's really weird how the school just functions with two gangs.
It does.
That they're very aware of.
Right. And it's like, if you don't, there are people there who don't belong to either of this, but really only to be shoved and told to shut the fuck up.
I'm pretty sure the other kids at school, like, they're a cult. And they're just totally okay. Yeah,
the rest of the people are thriving.
Yeah, they're doing fine. They're writing their own homework assignments and they're doing great.
Yeah, both of the gangs that run the school are dumb as rocks. Like, all of them without reservation are full on morons. And, like, I would include Stephanie in that assessment because we hear snippets of her essay.
Well, right.
And it is ridiculous.
There's that scene where they're at the diner and he's like helping her with her Shakespeare essay and everything that she's saying, just like making up words and saying very stupid things. And
like Shakespeare.
And it makes you wonder, why does Michael like her? Obviously, he wants to fuck her, but like, what about her personality?
There's something great about Michelle Pfeiffer that very few people acknowledge, and that is she looks like a very dainty blonde lady, but she is the most Jersey Italian persona.
Yeah.
Like everything I've ever seen her in, she's like, I've murdered some people, now I'm here.
But I looked good doing it.
Yeah, that's why I love... I don't know why I easily love those kind of characters where you're like, I feel like she can just beat us all up, and I'm quite content with that.
I mean, look,
she's Catwoman. She's
Catwoman, Married to the Mob is a phenomenal movie where she is...
Oh, I have seen that.
It's a good one. She's running away from the mob. It's really...
I would love to see Michelle Pfeiffer run from the mob for
Scarface
2 hours.
Is another one.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that's her.
Mm-hmm. She's in Scarface?
Yeah.
Oh, so that was right after Grease 2. She was in Scarface.
Exactly.
Weird.
It's a solid follow-up.
Well, I was reading a little bit about Maxwell Caulfield, who is very bitter about Grease 2 and like blames it for ruining his career.
Oh, my.
Which I guess names something he did after. I personally can't, but there's like a quote from him saying like, oh, they were saying I was the next Richard Gere. But then Grease 2 sucked and I never bounced back. He was like in The Elephant Man on Broadway. Like he was a serious actor. And then I guess took a gamble on like a little blockbuster and thought that it kind of like ruined his career.
Oh, please.
It's like, well,
That's not true. Everybody else, most of the people from that movie kept working.
Right. Like everyone's in, you know, it seems par for the course, but he's bitter about it, baby.
Aww. Well,
I don't care.
How did he age?
I mean, I guess... realistically, he aged realistically. Here's a picture of him now.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
he's not, doing fine.
He's okay. It's not the way I prefer.
Perhaps not for me, but like...
He looks slippery. That's what...
He looks like he's just covered in jam.
He's covered in grease. Grease.
I did really enjoy his solo number where, again, he's just wandering around singing to himself. What's the name of the song? It's, Charades.
Charades.
A lot of the singing in this movie sounds mumbled.
It is. I think the only song I can recall is Cool Rider. The other songs definitely fall to the wayside.
Well, there's the song about... I like how there's a whole song about, like, women's reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
When, the substitute teacher just comes in. All right, so the...
I liked
that. Most of the song and, like, all the imagery on the board in the classroom is like plants, but he's drawing a woman's uterus and like fallopian tubes and shit.
He's a substitute. Give him a break.
But anyway, and then he's asking different members of the class, when is it the best time for a woman to conceive? So I guess they're in sex ed class, even though it seems like they're in biology. But then they sing the whole song, which is obviously like subtext.
And also the music about, teacher like, plants. Is watching.
Right. She comes in. So she's a music appreciation teacher, right? But then,
but more
they're
importantly,
in her,
she's horny.
But they're in her class. Stephanie submits her like Shakespeare essay to her class, also an English teacher.
There's
it's very confusing.
What's happening at Rydell?
Grease 1 and Grease 2 are all about. It's all about teen sex, but no one is directly talking about it in a manner that makes any sense.
Right.
And every student or really is having 30. It.
Like, characters have sex in the first one because there's a pregnancy right. scare. I yes. feel like no one actually has sex in this one.
Well, there's that one off line that ends with the principal breaking the fourth wall where she's like, I haven't had my period in two months. And then she says, makes some sort of
oh, punctuation she's like, you can stay
joke.
After school to make those up. Hilarious right. joke.
Right. And then she goes, and like turns to camera. You're like, okay, I guess that was worthwhile. Mm-hmm. No, I liked the reproduction song strictly for the kid with the bass voice who goes like, where does the pollen go? 400 times.
Ooh, I found it interesting. So many times on this podcast, we have come across a movie where a man surprise kisses a woman just out of nowhere
ooh,
without
yes,
permission.
Yes, I thought of that too.
That happens in this movie, except the roles are reversed.
Right.
Where the woman surprise kisses a man.
What do we think?
Well, I think it's just about as okay as it is when a man does it to a woman, which is not okay. Yeah. But he was like smitten by it.
Right.
Which is how they decided to portray that reaction in this movie. Might that happen in real life to certain men? Sure. But also, other men might be like, ugh, I don't want to be surprise kissed without my permission
right.
by anyone.
It is the trope, and it isn't, because the one I always return to, just because it's the most egregious example of that, is the Brendan Fraser
I knew
kiss
you were
in The
that.
Mummy, where he's in a cage. And he lunges.
Farrell Fraser.
He's shirtless. He's dirty. He lunges at a woman and kisses her. And then he's like, you deserved it. Like, it's like the most insane
oh, wow.
throwaway scene in The Mummy. And we're still supposed to be like, he's
how romantic.
He can't be controlled.
Yes.
That's what I love about him. He won't listen. But yeah, I mean, because they played it, I don't know. He was into it. I mean, and maybe am I victim blaming Maxwell Caulfield? Oh no.
I don't know. It's
that
it's,
registered with me too, but I was right. like, oh, but it made him so happy.
I mean, if people are going to kiss each other, let there be some lead in. Let the person know you were about to kiss him and make sure they're okay with it.
Let him go on a date first.
Yeah.
She will not accept his invitation for a date, right. no matter how many times he asks her like, with his hands
tomorrow,
on his face.
The next day? The day after?
And she's like, you don't understand. I'm beholden
cool
by this insane code. Oh, yeah. And then she mumbles and like walks away.
Unless you're this guy from my dreams.
Yeah. And he'll show up. And he does.
He does.
I love that precedent.
Look, that is very much, the movie is about the secret. And
yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer manifests hard in this movie. To the point where he shows up at like the gas station she works at.
Or she's overwhelmed. Everyone's like, are you going to clean my windshield? Can I pay for this? Where are your maps? She's like, I'm just going to get on the back of his motorcycle and run away.
Other trope we've come up against a number of times, woman who we know isn't like the other girls because she knows about a car. She knows a thing
yeah.
or two about a car, a la Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding.
And Transformers,
and
Megan Fox.
Right. It's like we never see her do work on a car, but she says the word windshield. We see her in something overall like, and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, she was definitely wearing the least amount of clothes to work on a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, cause she's working at like a gas station, like auto body yeah. shop. So.
Right. People need maps. I was right. like, oh my God, there was a time where that was true.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that. Good noticing the trope, Jamie. Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding, ding. I also love that this movie, I think, appeals to me so strongly because it is a movie with a lot of needless musical numbers, which I love. And mm-hmm. and it's about a woman taking a man and fixing him, which is my objective.
Yeah, that is.
And I'm very.
Although
good
she's
at
not
it.
Very active in fixing him, he's the one who's like, I'm gonna change everything about myself,
even easier.
But
yeah.
it's still right. manifest destiny, like it's
yeah. kind of
she just like gives him the cliff notes via Cool Rider of yeah. like, this is what I need you to do. Come back when you've done
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like mm-hmm. Freddie yes. Pinch Jr. had to she's all that.
Yeah.
Whole way through, and she's like, you know, I'm not gonna lift a finger for you. If you want to be this person, you have to figure it out.
You're gonna need to like. put a motorcycle together with scrap metal. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to be practicing every day after school with Frenchie, the weird feral adult who wanders the street in her old jacket. And you had,
like, making creams.
Yeah. And he had to become the best guy on a motorcycle. Not even just right. good at a motorcycle, like he had to become the best.
He jumps yeah. over 100-foot wide. He jumps over 100-foot wide ravine.
The ravine.
Like, she was not going to accept anything beneath a cool rider.
How did he get so good so fast?
Look, if you have the need and you have the energy and, like, look, it's her vision board.
Where there's a will.
She had the right. strength.
There's a way.
And he's manifesting, too.
Mm-hmm. Two vision boards working at the same time can do a lot of things.
I keep screaming this at my loved ones. And no one responds.
You're right, though. I mean, he changes everything. So wait, are we to believe what happens in the end exactly? So he comes back at like the luau,
mm-hmm.
yes.
in his garb, in his goggles, in his leather.
It's basically it's the point of no
vest,
return.
Mm-hmm. I think
in Phantom of the Opera.
But then, so he reveals who he is, and Stephanie's all like, "Cool, I like you still." Mm-hmm. And then he's like, "I wouldn't think you would have liked me if you knew who I actually was." She's like, "You're crazy.
You did the
is
work
he, though, because." She said in the beginning, "Oh, I wouldn't like you when you're you."
She's gaslighting him, and I'm completely okay with that.
It's nice to see it the other way around every once in a while.
Like, yeah, no, I always liked you. Oh, yeah. You're not crazy at all. Yeah, let her do it.
Yeah, please. Let's see more women gaslighting men. You're right.
Hell yeah. Well, there's like that small, I feel like the only reason that was supposed to work, besides the fact that nothing in this movie has to make sense per se, is like there was a little bit of a connection in that scene in the diner where she's like, "You probably think I'm dumb." And he's like, "No, I think you're really hot."
In fact,
like, he still doesn't say, "I don't think you're dumb."
Well, he's like, "I'm dumb too. I just have a British accent, so no one notices, and I can say some big words."
I'm like, don't be insecure. You're writing everyone yeah. at this high school's essays.
He's gaslighting himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's aren't, like, we oh. aren't we all?
That's the thing. If you're so good at gaslighting, you'll eventually make somebody gaslight themselves. And yeah. that is...
It's just another way of manifesting and cutting out the middleman.
So in that way, she's like an evil mastermind. And yes. I respect her.
Yes. She got what she wanted by literally putting the least amount of effort and by just simply a manipulative suggestion.
You're right.
Via a very catchy song. Maybe that's
probably
what
the catchiest song.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cool Rider is better than any song in Grease. One.
Yeah. It doesn't mention if you raped a woman in it at all, which is.
Oh, right. Did she put right. up a fight?
Yeah. That's oh, still there's... right there.
But I mean, in this one, the bomb shelter scene is like, ooh.
It is.
There is. I mean, at first she's like, "I want to leave." And he's like, "You can't.
You can't. There's a war outside. There's nuclear bombs dropping
like,
around
okay.
us."
Okay, but they're both fucking dumb as rocks. It's
well, yeah. He convinces her that the Russians are dropping nuclear warheads on them right then,
mm-hmm.
and she's like, "You're right. We have to stay in here for our country and make love for our country." And then I think they're about to start like making out. And then she's like, "Wait a minute." And then opens the door. I forget what happens, but she opens the door. And then the two other T-birds like fall out into the bunker
yeah.
that they're in.
And she does
and
leave.
She's like, "Oh." So I like that there's a bunch of times in this movie where the T-birds, who are very toxic in their masculinity, are being very toxic toward the women. And they don't stand for it. They're like, "Uh-uh. No, you're being gross. No, thank you."
Well, they put up with it for a little bit, but then they eventually fight.
They succumb because they all end up together at the end, which is not ideal. But I feel like in the first movie, a lot of that toxic masculinity went unchallenged or like,
yes.
So like, do you remember in one of the very opening scenes in the first Grease, there's just a guy lying on the bleachers looking up a woman's skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then she like noticed, someone points it out to her and she's just like, "Ah," and she runs away. And then all the other dudes are like, "Oh, cool."
Well, that's why it's like, yeah, the T-Bird characters are like kind of unchanged from the first movie, but it's just like, they're not made to seem very cool.
Right. They're framed
movie.
Differently.
They're not in charge of the school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird that they were ever in charge of the school to begin with. Like,
because they're dumb as well.
Like, Danny Zuko had to take a fucking PE class and he was so frail that he couldn't do anything.
I like, forgot about that. Yeah.
Why are these guys in charge?
They know how to fix up a car. And honestly, in my book, that's the hottest thing you can do.
Cars.
Just kidding.
It's like they're the bad gang, and there's an even like meaner gang that's crueler than them in a nearby school always, too.
Right, within motorcycle distance.
But those guys in the first one, they were all about cars, like convertible, whatever. And then in this movie, it's all about the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Times are changing,
Times are changing.
I'll be honest with you, the motorcycle is my thing too. I get it. I like
it's
it.
Better.
I enjoy it.
Bad boys.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like there's at least some element of skill involved. Danny Zuko jumps no ravine.
Yeah.
No ravine is and jumped.
He does drive through like
he almost
like under
got
a bridge.
In danger. Like he
yeah.
almost
right.
But also like
Danny Zuko.
There's no like there's zero. I don't think there's any explanation of the ravine survival.
Right. I think we just assumed that he made the jump and then hid for a few days.
Yeah, which is also like, the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, where was he? When
he's hiding. He's hiding out in his bunker.
One of two things happened. You survived and you should have been at school the next day. Right. Or you managed to get an injury that required only 2 days of recovery.
He's mysterious.
Did he live with parents?
He lived with his aunt and uncle.
Oh, so, okay. So Sandy's
parents, I guess.
Also, this exchange program at the school just only taking in one student at a time.
And they're always white.
And announce them on the intercom the day they get there.
By the way, we have another white kid. This is a very white movie, by the way. Even whiter, I think, than the first movie.
Cannot confirm that because they're both very white.
Is there a non-white character in this movie?
I cannot recall in either film.
In the first one, at least, you see a couple extras who are people of color. I don't even know if you see that in Grease 2.
I was just going to say,
a tiny glimpse of someone.
Looking at this wide shot of the bowling scene is literally like the picture of Paul Ryan's interns. Like, it's just a sea of white teenagers. Very unappealing.
Any other scenes that anyone wants to talk or any other points people would like to make?
Oh, man.
Oh, this is just a great movie.
It's so fun. I was prepared for like a... This was like positioned to be as like a bad movie.
Yeah, because people mocked it for so long.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where it's earned its own cult following, and I prefer it more than the original because it's just a little more effervescent and there's more dynamics between human beings, and just also I can't reiterate how great of a song Cool Rider is. It is hands down.
Makes the movie.
Like, you should just listen to it in general as a song to listen to because it actually holds up as a pop song on its own.
It's And it's, we didn't say a female director, the choreographer from the first movie, like Solomon said. I love a choreographer directed movie, i.e., all of the High School Musical movies are directed by the choreographer. And you can tell because story is not super important, and the dance scenes are unbelievable.
Exactly. And the dance scenes in this one are superior.
So
they're insane
by far. Yeah,
they're great. More choreography.
Wait, who
was
the director? What's her name?
Her name is Patricia Birch.
Yes,
very good.
So she choreographed the first one and then directed and choreographed the second one.
I didn't even realize that. I didn't do my research. Whoops.
It's okay.
Yeah, I mean. I really liked it. Let me rephrase. Okay. I liked it. I'm not a big fan of musicals. I like this one.
Don't understand.
Look, we'll never comprehend that a part of you, but we get it.
I know. I liked this one a whole lot more than Grease 1. And part of that is because I think it treats its female characters a little better. You know, not a huge amount. This could have been... If I was to rewrite this movie, it would be about Stephanie... She's smart, for one. She's not a fucking dumbass idiot.
But everyone in this, like, I was like, well, all the female characters are dumb. But I was like, oh, but all the male characters, everyone's dumb.
Everyone's
except
dumb.
Except for Michael Carrington.
Right.
But he's also the dumbest of all. Because he changes
he's
to
like,
be more dumb.
He's like, oh, I just want to put my dick in this blonde lady so I have to pretend to be dumb and to change everything.
But let's be fair. Is anyone in high school smart?
Yes, I was extremely smart and good, and I made no mistakes, and I was perfect.
No. I believe you.
I mean, even if you're like a dumb, immature teenager, you can still be like academically smart. Yes. You don't have to be a fucking idiot who like can't string a sentence together and when you're writing a paper about Shakespeare. So I would have just made her a little smarter.
Yes.
Made her not so beholden to this weird code that they've all decided is a thing and been like, actually, I'm going to go and make out with whoever I want, which is something that she says. She's like, I can kiss whoever I want, whenever I want. And then suddenly she's like, actually, nope.
Forgot
the rules. Whoops. So I would have had her be more proactive about like breaking these established rules, you know, breaking the status quo, actually doing whatever she wants and not, you know, waiting till a man changes for her. Although I do like that that happens. So I don't know. I just would have made her a little bit more.
Yeah, I can in good conscience condemn a man changing for me. Has to be a behavior that I would encourage under any circumstances.
But he's already like mostly perfect on paper, at least.
But if you're dumb as rocks, you wouldn't know.
You have to test that pliability.
Sure.
True. How willing are you?
Like, you're supposed to just assume he might change.
Yeah, your tastes might change over the years.
Exactly.
So, like,
I just want to know, will you drive into a ravine for me?
Yeah. And he will.
I have that on my Tinder bio. Must be willing to drive over a ravine.
Because guess what else he'll do for you? Wash the dishes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guess what else he'll do for you? Hide in the woods for 2 days, faking his own death because of the foresaid ravine.
And if he's willing to do that,
he'll not assume that you'll do his laundry. That's
that. And exactly. He'll probably take as long as it takes to try to make you come.
Oh my God.
If he's
all
gonna
the
hide
time.
For 2 days, pretending to be dead, he's gonna go down on you.
Oh, Michael Carrington eats pussy.
An hour and a half.
Hands down. There's zero
100%.
doubt. Like, he.
Moment one, you're like, this guy eats.
Johnny. That's probably what he spent learning to do those 2 days. Just sucking on peach pits, just making sure.
The T-Birds think eating pussy is gross.
Yeah, no, totally. You. They're like, gross.
Or they'll do the thing, they're like the 10-second thing, like, are you good?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, my turn. You know,
absolutely.
They're selfish lovers and they have chodes.
Oh, no. They probably go in dick hard, ready to come in seconds.
All right. Hey, let's talk about whether or not this movie passes the Bechdel test.
It does.
It for sure does. Mm-hmm. Like in the first scene, whenever Miss McGee and Blanche come out and they're hanging up the flag.
Do
and
that
they're just
weird
like,
vaudeville scene that they call
there. They're just like, oh, our students are going to accomplish great things. It's going to be a great school year, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then it happens again, like in the opening dance number. Pink ladies are talking about stuff. They're talking about being late. The twin cheerleaders are like, hey, Miss Mason's hair. I love it. All 300 pounds of it.
They're talking about their friend who gets the nose job.
They're talking about. And then just several times throughout the movie, because there's a ton of female characters. Like,
yeah.
Probably more than men, even. At least ones with, like, significant screen time
like
speaking roles.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of throwaway motorcycle guys who are not part of, like, the rival guys, but they don't talk.
Yeah, they don't really have lines or anything like that. It's basically Crater Face, whatever his name is.
Yeah, they're mostly grunts.
Right.
On their end.
Yeah. And most of the men we see are those either, like, random substitute teachers or those motorcycle dudes. So at least you get to see, like, a bit more. There's different types of women with speaking roles in this movie. But yeah, it happens a bunch. There are a lot of scenes where women are talking and they are talking about men. But there are probably just as many scenes where they're not. And there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, total. And most of the scenes with all men, they're lamenting or condemning women in some way. So it goes
so they're
both ways.
They're failing the reverse Bechdel test is what they're doing.
Right. Like this movie, everyone's dumb in the same way. It's weird. So there is like a strange equality to it.
Yeah, true. Oh, I wanted to point out that one of the T-Birds is Thelma's husband from Thelma and Louise.
He just loves being problematic.
Oh my God.
He's just a...
That just happens.
He got typecasted as a shitty douchebag. At least in those two movies. I don't know what else he's in.
That's probably a good chance that he's been a shitty douchebag in more than one.
Yeah, probably.
Character actors, you gotta love them.
Oh, I love a good character actor. Speaking of which,
Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina, conceivably, given the age range, was eligible to play a high schooler in this movie.
What a missed opportunity.
Why couldn't we have had him as... They're like, there's a lot of motorcycle, and then there's this, the beefcake, and he's a little different. He's smart. And then he comes
in. He had just done his first role in Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think in 81.
81. Oh.
So he was already in the circuit. You know, he could have been.
He probably turned it down. He probably got an offer.
He probably turned it down.
I assume that everything has been offered to him.
Okay, let's rate the movie. We rate on our nipple scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal of women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it 2, 2.5. I'll go with a 2. Because while we do see Stephanie, the lead, having more agency than Sandy in the first movie, it's still, you know, everything is framed around, like, the guy she's going to, who is she going to end up with, her relationships to men. And there are, you do see a lot of, like, female friendships in this movie, although a lot of those aren't, like, poised as these, like, great things that we should strive for, because they're mostly just, like, mean to each other.
Every friendship in this movie is deeply toxic.
Exactly.
Yeah, the whole narrative just revolves around Stephanie's pursuit of a man or his pursuit of her. So, you know, it's not, and it, like I said, she's a fucking idiot. Again, everyone is pretty much. I don't know, it just could have been a better representation of women in this movie. So it gets some nipples off for that. That being said,
full set off.
I did enjoy watching this. Like I said, I don't really like a lot of musicals, but I did have a great time. And you were right. Cool Rider is a terrific song. And 2 nipples, they belong to, I'm going to say, Miss Mason, who is like, we didn't talk much about her, but I love how she's mostly just like, I'm hot and I spend a lot of time on my hair and I kind of want these high school boys to think I'm fuckable. And that's
kind of, she literally was, he's like, I want to see all of you. And she's like, we'll see. She could easily also be a student given the strange age range.
Right.
So I wasn't super bothered by it.
Yeah. So my 2 nipples belong to Miss Mason, the music appreciation / literature teacher at Rydell.
Catch all.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 3.
Okay.
Because I automatically am biased towards it because it is a fun movie musical. I agree that it, you know, all the problems you pointed out are very legitimate. Pitting it against Grease 1, it's just...
It fares, like, much better.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a fan fiction better version of the first one that works in favor of the female characters. And, like, while it would be cool for Stephanie to be like, I'm actually going to do me right now, that's not how this movie would end in any world. And so, I don't know. I liked it. I give a lot of stuff a pass because everyone in this movie is a fucking moron.
Right.
If the men were portrayed as more able to manipulate, because even, like, the one big male manipulation we see in the bomb shelter falls apart because everyone involved is a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls have the better songs across the board. The teacher is weird, but also her male counterpart is weird. And then there's the guy from the first movie who passes out in the pool. Everyone is...
He's suffering from mental exhaustion or something like that.
He's very sick. Because the last time we see him, he is just fallen over. He's just slouched over at the...
He has
the
like a mouthful of pills that he's trying to swallow. And then, like, a girl, like, screams because there's a rat on her desk. And then he just, like, passes out.
He has muscular dystrophy. He doesn't have control over his body. Like, but anyways, that's another movie. I'm going to give it 3. I'm going to give 1 of them to Mr. Spears because I just want to know more. And then I'm going to give the other 2 to Paulette because I feel like she ended the movie still thinking she was second best. Mm-hmm. And I wish I wish she hadn't settled for Johnny. But I'm sure she, like, figures that out.
She
should have
gone with that nerd guy at the beginning who was like,
oh, I forgot about him.
Talking about, like, the lockers. And he's like, oh, yeah, you can't go to those lockers.
What a weirdly intense character.
Or he's like, you have to lock your locker because these guys will steal everything.
He says lockers like 45 times and then leaves.
Oh, actually, that's a really funny joke because he's speaking to him as though he does not understand English very well because he's from a different country. But his country invented the damn language.
He's like, lockers, lockers, you gotta look out, the tough boys, lockers, lockers, and then just turns around and leaves, and then a tough boy comes up and he's like, hey, lockers.
Oh, I also wanted to point out, while Stephanie has more agency than like Sandy in the first movie,
yeah.
she still is not very active. She's just sort of like gliding through the mm-hmm. story. Pretty much the only active character is Michael.
Yeah.
Who's just like changing everything who's about himself. If the movie went my way, the way I wanted it to, she would have had a greater desire and then yeah. done something to actually pursue exactly. that and like been more active in that. But, you know, whatever.
I'll actually go with the three nipples as well. And I definitely do agree. The end of the movie should have been the T-Birds being completely dismantled and burned to the ground.
They represent the patriarchy.
Yeah, at the end of the movie,
let's dismantle it.
It should have just been, okay, I got my dream guy. Hey, pink ladies, we're going to go punch these fucking T-Birds in the face. That would have been a great ending to the movie.
Totally. Kind of like in the end of Mean Girls, when they're like, mm-hmm. let's not be Mean Girls anymore. And then when they're seniors, you see they're just like all friendly and cool and hanging out with whoever.
Right.
And then you see the junior plastics, and they're like, what a mistake they're making.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
If it ended with that, yeah, that would have been the better ending. And if I'm going to give my nipples to anything, it'd be to the ravine and whatever happened in there.
Whatever discarded nipples are under.
Maybe he fell into the ravine, was knocking on death's door. There's a wizard down there, and he's like, I'll grant you three wishes, but you have to
That's
sell
how
your
wizards
soul
work.
To me. Right? I'm like combining a genie and the devil.
Yeah, because okay, there's some ravine.
There's some billy goat down there who's like,
there's a riddles.
This half-ass wish-making that he's doing down there.
Basically, he encounters a mythological creature down there who's willing to revive him and grant him
a
life
centaur.
At a huge price.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So now Michael's walking around without a soul or without a dick or something, but he's alive.
We got to watch Grease 3.
We never see what's going on there.
Yeah, we'll find out. I'll write it. I'll write Grease 3.
Okay.
Because you can bring his cousin back in and him and they have to do...
Oh, God. Oh, Solomon, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
It's been a delight. Where can people find you online?
I'm at thesolomongiorgio.com. That is my website with all my dates. I'm also at Solomon Giorgio on Twitter and Solomon Giorgio everywhere else. I'm the only one. If there is another one, murder them.
Yeah, there can be only one. Follow Solomon. You can also follow us, The Bechdelcast, on Bechdelcast on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook. And you can go to our website, our brand spanking new shiny-ass website.
That we made on squarespace.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sponsored. It's just way easier.
Yeah. Go to www.bechdelcast.com. You can find information about our upcoming shows because we have a few coming up for different comedy festivals. Check that out. You can donate money to us to help us with our production costs. You can check out just more information about who we are and what we do. Hey, you know what? You can also follow me, Caitlin, at Caitlin Durante on Twitter.
You can follow me, too. I'm on Twitter at HamburgerPhone.
Hell yeah.
I can't change it. It's been 10 years.
Don't change yourself. Don't be Sandy. Don't be Michael Carrington. Be you.
Yeah,
and
my
stay
best
yourself
self.
And don't change.
A Juno reference. Jesus Christ.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.